Thanks for listening to the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio, the Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon.
Hey, buddy.
We got Todd Furman coming your way in about 20 minutes. All the latest news out of Vegas. What do we expect out of a big day in college football tomorrow? The NFL this weekend. But before we get to that, it is time to go big game hunting.
Oh, good. I thought you were going to talk about the screw job going on with Fresno State and UNLV when you said
no,
Vegas.
Dude, it's Fresno State and they're not
playing UCLA.
Did
you see that touchdown pass? The guy was out of bounds. And everybody goes, wow, that was just such a cool throw and catch. It's got to stay. It's like, no! He's out of bounds! Great throw from Hayner. Great! Yeah. That's fine! His foot was out of bounds!
Yeah. It's what happens, buddy. It's what happens.
What, you're getting reputation calls 1 week after beating UCLA?
Yes.
That's what we're getting in these games? Come on.
Hey, I'm getting the all-star call. It's like Fresno State's become Devin Booker this year. Hey, we're getting the all-star calls now. We've arrived. You thought we'd be there after David Carr was so good like 20 years ago, but wow, now we're really there, man. This is great.
Crazy, man. Crazy.
But before we get to the pick of Super Bowl 55.5, there's some surprising things going into week three of the NFL. And clearly, look, all the attention's going to be on Tampa Bay and the Rams, and rightfully so. But I got to be honest, if you ask me who the best team in the NFL is the first 2 weeks of the season, I'm going to tell you the Raiders. All right, there's teams that are 2-0. There's teams that have looked good. Look, Tampa clearly has done everything they're supposed to. They've picked up where they left off last year. They've played well. The Rams have played well. They've done exactly what you expect them to do. Here comes Matthew Stafford in and being Matthew Stafford. Not being anything more than a guy that's going to throw 30 to 35 touchdowns, 10 or 12 picks, 4,000 yards. It's what Matthew Stafford does. But the Raiders have not only won both their games, they have done it in a very difficult manner, right? You win on Monday Night Football against the Ravens, right? A back-and-forth game you tried to give to the Ravens because, you know, Raiders are going to Raider. But you still find a way to win that game, and then you come back in a short week on the road and you beat the Steelers. It's not just winning these games, it's how they're doing it. Because the Raiders have been talented for a couple of years now, but they always find a way to get back to the middle. As good as they play, oh, they won a couple of games, and but now they lose two or three in a row, and they're in trouble. But this is a different Raiders team. This is a team that offensively has a different identity. As Derek Carr has been dink and dunk the past few years, look, he's got a great completion percentage, and he moves the ball well enough, but you need to be a little bit more dynamic. And now what have we seen? The guy leads the NFL in yards passing because he's got a lot of weapons down the middle of the field with Waller and Renfro, on the outside with Ruggs and Edwards, and he is throwing down the field with abandon. It's a pretty decent Ravens defense he torched. It's a pretty decent Steelers defense that he torched. You got to give them credit, and they are so impressive, and they look like the best team because they now look like they can win any kind of game. Look, Derek Carr has always been a quarterback that has played well in the fourth quarter. He's played well at the end of games. But overall, he's kind of been just a guy for the most part because, you can't single-handedly win you games like Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady and some of these best quarterbacks can, and Russell Wilson. He can't do that. But now he's doing it. And now it's aggressiveness, and it's hard to stop this offense. The Raiders have a lot of weapons. Things are different for them. Doesn't matter if Josh Jacobs is playing or not. I mean, you're talking about a guy that's one of the better running backs in the NFL. Haven't really had him for 2 weeks. They haven't needed him. This is a different Raiders team, man. I know it's 2 weeks, but if you ask me the best team in the NFL is right now, I tell you it's the Raiders.
Yeah, I sit and wonder, with the Ravens and the Steelers, when we look at their defenses, how much of that was the Raiders being physical and beating them up, or how much was it that luck that you saw so many of the defensive starters for both those squads go out of the game? Look, and then you take advantage of opportunities that come. Right? As we always say, you can only beat who's on the schedule, and in an 11-on-11 battle, you can only beat who's on the field. So don't want to denigrate their efforts. But here, you got another would-be top 10 defense in Miami this week. So that's another one of your favorite games of the week, as it were. But you know, when I go down the list, you just got a lot of 1-1 teams, teams you expected to be good. I don't know how great Denver will be. I like they're all 53, but Bradley Chubb being out, that changes the complexion of what that defense might be able to do. And Teddy Bridgewater, you're trying to go with all the feel-good stuff. We already talked about Sam Darnold a bunch and the schedule. Again, beat who's on there, but recognize that adversity will come. Talking about the Buccaneers is boring. So that just gets me back to Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, I could go one of two directions, right? It's either Jimmy Garoppolo and the 49ers or Arizona and Kyler Murray. And earlier in the show, you know, a little bit of praise lavished upon what Kingsbury and Murray and company are doing. DeAndre Hopkins, you know, who's, you know, hands have more stick'em evidently than anything else out there because, well, he doesn't drop anything between he and Larry Fitzgerald, who's now, he's not really officially retired. He's just kind of hanging out. But guys that don't drop balls, and you look at the offense of what they've done the first 2 weeks, 72 points put up and then gutted out a win in week two. But I'm going to go back to Jimmy Garoppolo, all the smoke about Trey Lance and everything else. And what did he do? He just kept smiling and living his best life. And we'll see if the attrition is there and enough to derail things, right? Raheem Mostert goes down. Elijah Mitchell pops up, and he's the waiver wire darling. And now, well, he's banged up too. The physical style goes both ways, right? You may claim some opponents and bully them and in the fourth quarters, wear them down, and maybe you injure some guys. Not in a you know, dirty galooly kind of way, but just, you know, physical punishment from a running style. But that also wears on your skill position guys and certainly on your offensive and defensive line as well. So early on, I like what Jimmy Garoppolo's done. Doesn't take too many chances, taking care of the football, and right now sitting at 2-0 with a big Sunday night football game ahead. So get the popcorn ready.
All right, so if you're talking about the biggest surprises, who looked like the best team in the NFL, now let's get to the team who was the best last year and a team I picked for the Super Bowl this year in the Rams, right? So, look, Raiders 49ers playing great. Look, I think the Raiders, Mike says 49ers, Twitter at How About a Fresca, Mike at Swollen Dome. But this game Sunday is where everybody clears the decks, and this is the game that everybody is paying attention to. And in this game, I'm going to take the Rams for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's a bigger game for them than the Bucs. Not that the Bucs are going to be flat for this game, but it's a more special game for LA. There is more at stake for them. There's more at stake for them than there are the Bucs, right? Because the Bucs are saying, okay, look, we've been good. We lose this game. We lose this game. The Rams really want to show that we're as good as people think they are. And Sean McVay, more importantly, wants to show off Matthew Stafford. I want to show him off to a big national audience so everybody can see, hey, this is why we said, take Jared Goff, we'll give you 45 first-round picks, just give me Matthew Stafford. And they're going to throw the ball 50 times in this game. They're not even going to try to run it. Look, the Bucs are a pretty good defense, pretty good against the run. The Rams have injury issues, doesn't matter. They're not even going to try to run the football. They are just going to throw it all day, and they'll be able to put points up on the board. Like I said, more at stake for them. They're playing at home. There's going to be a little bit something extra special for them. And defensively, this is a team that gives Tom Brady difficulty because as long as they can get after him, when you have Aaron Donald, you can pretty much do whatever you want to do. As long as they can get after him without having to bring pressure and bring outside pressure and blitzes, they're going to cause problems for him because the one thing I'll tell you is going to happen is early on in this game, they're going to get to Brady, they're going to hit him, they're going to make him feel uncomfortable in the pocket. And I don't know why more people don't talk about this, but hey, I'll be the great guy to tell you that. Is every time this happens and Brady starts feeling uncomfortable, you see two things. He throws the ball way early and he throws the ball low. Nobody likes being pressured in the pocket. I get it, but usually guys find a way to stay in there and throw. But since his knee injury, Brady doesn't like that. And if you can get to him early in the game, you don't even have to really destroy him, because look, Brady doesn't get hit that hard. But if you're just around him and there's some kind of you got a lot of traffic and chaos in front of him, he throws it early and he throws it low, and it's not a great look, and it's not a great amount of production for Tom Brady-led teams. So I can see the Rams doing this early, forcing Brady into this, and it's going to take a while for the Bucs to get in this game, and the Rams are going to have enough of a lead and put up enough points to win this game. And it's going to be a Rams. It's going to be the big Matthew Stafford. Hey, it's the greatest moment of his career. It's going to be, look at where Matthew, all the love for Sam Darnold after last night, forget it. It's look at Matthew Stafford. Everybody's going to talk about Matthew Stafford. Matthew Stafford's the best. It's Stafford, 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 Stafford. That's all it's going to be, all about Matthew Stafford, because the Bucs may just not have enough this week. And not having Antonio Brown, if they don't have him, is a really big deal, because of all the great weapons they have on that offense, Brown clearly is Brady's favorite wide receiver. That's his preferred guy. It's not Godwin. It's not Evans. It's not Gronkowski. It's not anybody else. It's not James Lofton. It is Antonio Brown. And right now he's in COVID protocols. We know he's got vaccinated because the Bucs are 100% vaccinated. So he might not A, be able to play, or B, if he plays, is he going to be at full strength? Is he someone that you're going to be able to blanket on Sunday because he's not quite what he normally is? That's a really big thing. That's a really big weapon for Brady to lose. I think the Rams have a little bit too much for Tampa Bay on Sunday.
Yeah, a little concerned about the secondary for Tampa Bay. Some big losses there to injury early this season. So potential for chaos downfield. It's really going to come down to the battle of the fronts and what Tampa Bay's O and D lines are able to do, right? If they're able to actually disrupt Matthew Stafford in the pass game, right? Because let's assume to a degree they're not going to try to really establish the run with Darrell Henderson, and again, establish the run, the euphemism, just in terms of attempts when you're setting up your offense, that's not the focal point, right, against that defensive front, as good as they are. But Matthew Stafford's basically been clean jersey club guy for the first 2 weeks, so we'll see if they can get after him. Jason Pierre-Paul will be unavailable for this one as we go forward. So the curiosity, you bring up Antonio Brown, you can still cause chaos for the Rams secondary. But again, it's going to come back to giving Brady the pocket, as you so astutely pointed out, and trying to disrupt what Aaron Donald does, right? And giving Brady enough time to pick things apart. Narrow, scant, one-point spread. I'm looking at the Buccaneers to take care of business. Any of the nonsense of look-aheads and whatever newspapers and fodder and build-up, because, well, they want Mac Jones versus Tom Brady, so why not start building it now? You know, you still have a game to play, but that's okay. Start the pregame and tailgating a week ahead of time. For Brady and company, it's an operational efficiency, a business trip to SoFi Stadium. Ramsey most likely gets Evans, which means, oh, you still have Godwin, you still have Johnson, you still have that Gronk guy that nobody bothers to cover. O.J. Howard. I mean, just keep going down the line. There's Giovanni Bernard out of the backfield, Ronald Jones. I still don't know whether he's in or out of Bruce Arians' doghouse. I don't think that's been confirmed. I just don't want to see a lot of passes lofted up to Leonard Fournette. He tries.
It's
but it
okay. Look, they'll run Eric Rett if they have to. All right? They can bring
Ooh, that's
him
a good pull.
You like that, huh?
I do like that. But, yeah, Kevin Minter also questionable, leaning towards probably sitting this one out for Tampa as well. Look, it's a long 17-game season, as we know, and they're not playing, neither team, playing for headlines here in September. They'd like them, sure. It'd be nice, and anybody that wants to back the Matthew Stafford Express would certainly love a victory here. But bigger picture, you're also, I'm wondering in terms of game planning, how much there might be left off in another room in a vault somewhere, knowing that you're probably going to see this team, they'll see each other again later in the season.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
I love it.
Fox Sports Radio, the Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon.
What's up?
Tons of action coming up in the next few hours in college football. Another big NFL weekend. Joining us now on the hotline, nobody better than a longtime Vegas insider, Todd Furman, former odds maker at Caesars, co-host Bet the Board podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at Todd Furman. That is at Todd Furman. Todd, who has spent the last few minutes trying to calculate how Syracuse can get into the college football playoff after their win over Liberty. Todd, what have you come up with?
I've come up with 129 teams need to cancel their programs for the remainder of the season, and that will give Syracuse an unobstructed path into college football superstardom.
So you're saying there's a chance?
There's always a chance, but you know what? A lot more optimism in Central New York now after the big win against Liberty than you would have had a couple of weeks ago. And who knows? I think if Syracuse is able to get to the postseason with six wins, it would have to be considered a massive success given what we saw last year during the pandemic season.
Hey, listen, I'm not greedy. You know, some people, they want to reach for the stars. I'm like, no, let's just reach for the car door. Right? Hey, if six wins in a bowl game, hey, six wins in a bowl game, that's great.
I mean, I think the pinnacle of Syracuse football these days is getting to the Pinstripe Bowl, having a chance to play in Yankee Stadium. But you always do wonder during a telecast when they have to spend 15 minutes showcasing all of those new features for the Carrier Dome, taking away from that beautiful on-field action.
All right, well, let's look at some of the big on-field action tomorrow. One of my big upset specials tonight, we did our picks tonight, college football. I like Notre Dame over Wisconsin. 7 points is a lot of points to give to Notre Dame. And again, am I missing something here? Notre Dame's 3-0. Wisconsin's already lost. Notre Dame looks like, you know, they have the better quarterback in the game. What am I missing here, Todd?
Well, I think they've played a different strength of schedule, and I mean, the only reason I say that is because Wisconsin opened up with a home loss against Penn State that I think will look better and better by the week. Well, you begin to wonder Notre Dame's resume. They slip by Toledo in the waning seconds there. They're able to outlast Florida State opening weekend, and of course, played a little bit more of a complete game in a 27-13 victory against Purdue. The biggest problem for this Notre Dame team is that offensive line that really hasn't been able to protect Jack Cohen. Unfortunately for the Irish, it doesn't look like Tyler Buckner will even be available, so they won't have a change of pace guy there. The other reason that this number has ballooned out as much as it has is because the bye week that Wisconsin has working in their favor. It'll give Jim Leonard and company time to scheme up a few unique things, change some of that verbiage given Jack Cohen's familiarity. But knowing that Wisconsin really can't make it easy in terms of scoring throughout the course of a football game, can understand completely why the underdog is live here, and that's a big reason why you've seen this game take a significant amount of money under the total as well.
Todd, can we back out and do a big picture look-see? When we get this deep into a season, and look, we're not full immersed, like we're halfway through or on the back nine, but when we see spreads that are still sitting in the 20s, the 30s, can you bet those with more confidence than you do in the opening weeks, or does it become the noise filtered out to where you're really kind of in no man's land, perhaps, with your information?
I think you kind of have to gauge motivation and what these teams are playing for early in the season against inferior opponents. I mean, we're seeing a game going on right now where Fresno State has kind of gone through the motions, and they're going to come nowhere close to covering as a 30-point favorite against UNLV. You look at a couple of games that will fall into that bucket tomorrow. What will we get from BYU in the wake of three straight wins against Pac-12 teams? Here comes lowly USF into Provo. Could be a little bit sleepy and laying, you know, north of three scores. Probably not the best long-term situation to try and be able to do so. And something similar unfolding with Auburn too. You know, if Auburn is busy licking their wounds in the wake of that near miss against Penn State, knowing they're going to get into the heart of conference play beginning next week, do you really want to go to the window and lay 28 points against Georgia State? Probably not a recipe for success, in my opinion, either.
All right, Todd, let's look ahead to the NFL. Mike and I made our picks a few minutes ago. Look, Super Bowl 55.5. Everybody's looking at Bucks Rams. How do you like this game?
I like this game over the total. I don't know which of these defenses will get consistent stops. When you look at some of the vulnerabilities for the Bucs, we know how good that defensive line is, but the secondary leaves a lot to be desired, specifically no true slot corner on that roster with Sean Murphy bunting missing time. I think that's where the Rams can pick them apart. Meanwhile, people want to talk about this Rams defense. We know about the star power with Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald, but they've only forced 3 punts through the first two games, and if the Colts had any better play calling in the red zone, we'd be talking about a Rams team sitting 1-1, and even the Bears were able to move the ball pretty much from start to finish, just bogging down with turnovers and coming up short on downs. But they only punted once, and that was under the leadership of Andy Dalton. So you can imagine what Tom Brady and company should be able to do on the big stage Sunday.
I see what you did there. You praised him until you didn't. He's Todd Furman with us at the Bet the Board podcast. At Bet the Board pod is where you find it on Twitter. It's he and Payne Insider. What, about an hour and a half, I think, was the latest episode, Todd, that was up. A bit of a marathon. Some discussions of games and going in deep inside the numbers. Not just where the money's going, but where the football flows. You can find Todd on Twitter at Todd Furman as well. The NFL slate has some fun to it. Jason alludes to that one. I also like the Monday night game. What do we like or not of Philadelphia on the road, 3.5 the number against Dallas?
This number has kind of come down a shade, and you're looking at, like you said, Dallas, a 3.5-point favorite. Number got as high as 4.5 before there was some resistance. I think when you look at this Cowboys team, obviously skepticism for their ability to go out there and blow teams away, playing in their own building. Dak Prescott talking about how emotional it's going to be, his first home start, of course, since that gruesome leg injury last year against the Giants. Meanwhile, Philadelphia is starting to deal with injuries already. Brandon Graham, Brandon Brooks out as well. But I think Jalen Hurts and company can provide a little bit of a dangerous matchup for a Dallas defense not known for getting pressure on opposing quarterbacks. Could give Hurts ample opportunity to scramble out of the pocket. And I think the underdog has a little bit of life to them here. Catching the 3.5 can also see making a case for going over the total.
Todd Furman, Vegas Insider with us here, the Jason Smith Show with my best friend Mike Harmon. All right, so last hour we talked about the pressure Aaron Rodgers has on him, deciding to stand up and say, we told you everything was good after you beat the Lions is okay. When you got a game against the Niners coming up with that defense, how well they've played, I don't know that this is the right week to stand up and say, hey, yeah, you want to throw stuff at me, I'll throw it right back at you. How do you see Packers-Niners on Sunday?
I think it's a question of which team can actually get a stop. I mean, you look at these two teams defensively. Green Bay hasn't really done much in the way of providing resistance through their first two games, and I don't think it's going to get significantly better with a pass rush that's non-existent and a secondary that, other than Jair Alexander, probably has more questions than answers. But on the other side, this is a 49ers team that's not anywhere close to full strength. A couple of key role players out there working on limited snap counts, not quite 100%. We know the secondary is a liability as well, so I wouldn't be surprised if you see both of these teams having success. San Francisco, of course, leaning on the ground game, expected to be Trey Sermon as the starting running back, getting 40 to 50 snaps, and of course Aaron Rodgers, as long as he can stay upright, carving up that 49ers secondary.
Nicely done. Big picture stuff, Todd. Through 2 weeks and overreaction theater, where have people started to lay down their dollars, you know, on Jason's, you know, MVP favorites for the years, you know, because he's right now on team Derek Carr?
Well, I don't know if Derek Carr is going to get himself fully into the discussion, but the Raiders have definitely been a pleasant story when you look at the way that they've handled business through their first two games, winning each one outright as an underdog. We'll see how they deal with some of that prosperity come Sunday with a Miami Dolphins team that's going to play with a chip on their shoulder with Jacoby Brissett leading the charge, knowing that they lost 35-0 last weekend against Buffalo. But the other player that I think garnering a lot of attention, and rightfully so far, would be Kyler Murray, given Arizona's quick start out of the gate. But this is the kind of spot where I'd be a little bit leery of laying points, even against the beleaguered Jag side, because for me, I power rate Denver better than I do Arizona, but the market here says Arizona is 1.5 points better, and this is also a perennial flat spot for Cliff Kingsbury and company that has not exactly been great in terms of lining people's wallet when they're laying points.
Todd, lastly, I've been waiting to talk to you about this story all week because I want you to take us behind the psychology and the thinking going into this. All right, now going into Monday night, there was the story of the bettor who put $25 on a 15-team run, and he could have turned into $736,000 as long as the Lions beat the Packers on Monday night. He had the Lions on the money line. Of course, that didn't work out. He didn't win. You go all the way through, and your last pick, you know, I'm going to go with the Lions on the road just because I hate Aaron. I mean, I don't understand why that's – like, I'm going to make my last pick. If it comes down to it, if I go 15 for 15, I'm going to make that last pick the Lions. Can you help us out with that?
Well, I think with some of these and the free rolls that players get out there, they don't really put a ton of thought into trying to map these things out and trying to figure out opportunity, because it's easy for me to sit here and criticize, honestly. But at the same time, if you're thinking about it from a mathematical standpoint, you don't want the last leg of a parlay that can have that kind of payday being an underdog at 4-1, because it's damn near impossible to hedge. Whereas if you're using the Green Bay money line there, you have ample opportunity to try and create a middle for yourself, hoping the game falls somewhere between 1-11. But I think this is the world we live in for sports gambling, and I'm always some of these outfits and reporters that share this information, but you notice that we only get the tidbits once the first 14 legs come home, not even before Sunday Night Football gets played. So I am more skeptical than ever that I think a lot of these things are aggressive marketing ploys, and quite honestly, I'm not going to fault the business for doing that if it gets them plenty of headlines around standalone football games.
Yeah, can't fault a good strategy. According to this, they peeled off $133,000 because it was the free bet, as you said, Todd, not eligible for the early cash out, but they quote-unquote made the one-time exception. I wonder what the amount of media coverage was worth.
I think it paid off a heck of a lot more as far as media impressions were concerned than a measly $130,000 for some of these operators that are spending like the money is burning a hole in their pocket or in the corporate coffers out there.
What if this was Calvin Johnson trying to get that money back from the Lions? This is his way to do it.
You know what? It'd be a great storyline. I think everyone would be rooting for Calvin Johnson even more so than they would be rooting for a random faceless sports bettor out there trying to take his pound of flesh away from corporate greed.
I want my $2.
He's on 4 weeks, $2. He's on Twitter, at Todd Furman. That is at Todd Furman, Vegas Insider, former odds maker at Caesars. Check out the Bet the Board podcast. Todd, as always, buddy, we appreciate your time with us, my friend. We'll talk to you next week.
You got it, guys. Have a great weekend.
See you, buddy.
I like that. Do I want to root for some nameless, faceless bettor or a guy that's made millions of dollars in his career in Calvin Johnson? I'm going to root for Calvin Johnson. I really want to see him do well. I want to see him get his money back.
Well, I want it, the pound of flesh. I think that's just appropriate there. I mean, it's so good.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, three-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler TJ Hushmanzada and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Hushmanzada, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
You know, today, look, and we've talked about this, briefly in the show. Today is the 30th anniversary of Nevermind. Right?
Yeah.
Nirvana's second album, which, you know, changed music. And it did, because it really ushered in the era of grunge. And anytime you can usher in an entirely new era of music, it's a really big deal. And, you know, look, this is not going to be a conversation where I sit here and tell you how important this album was. You can click on, you can just Google Nirvana Nevermind and get no shortage of people saying, this is so incredibly important. This album is so important. I can't tell you how important this album was. So it's not going to be that kind of conversation. 30 years ago, it seems crazy. You think about how time goes by. But I remember getting dragged to grunge, right? Because what grunge did was grunge killed hair metal. Like, you know, hair metal had owned the late 80s into the early 90s. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, the metal scene was such a big deal, right? Because it was Metallica and Megadeth. And then you're getting hair bands, and it's Guns N' Roses, and it's Poison, and it's all these bands, Slaughter, and everybody that takes you through the mid-90s. I did get Slaughter in. Up All Night.
They seemed like they were jammed in with some of the legendary bands of all time. Metallica and Guns N' Roses and Slaughter.
Sure. Enough's enough. Yeah, sure. But that was a big deal. You know, hair metal was a really big deal. Skid Row and all these other bands that were born out of this. And Pearl Jam and Nirvana come around at the same time. And, like, that was it. It was a change in how people dressed. It was a change in how people just went about listening to music. And that's the big thing that I remember, is that it was just a change in lifestyle. Like, nobody was wearing tight leather pants and had teased out hair anymore. It all was, hey man, I'm gonna wear flannel shirts and jeans with rips in them and earrings and all the, yeah, I'm gonna wear that. And I was like, hey, I've been way ahead of that. I've been wearing t-shirts and jeans and flannel shirts since 1984.
I wish I bought some flannel futures, let me tell you.
But Nirvana was, because it wasn't like you had to fight, there was a big battle between the two, but if it was a choice between Pearl Jam or Nirvana, because there was that natural rivalry, they both come out of Seattle, they both make it big about the same time, I was always team Pearl Jam. I was never Nirvana. I just like them, and as time goes on, look, their music, you realize how good it is, but at the time, I'm like, yeah, Nirvana's good. Oh, Pearl Jam is way better. Like, I was always like, yeah, Nirvana, okay, yeah, Nirvana's fine. They're good. Pearl Jam is incredible. They're better musically. Their songs are better. Everything else is better. And I kind of looked down on Nirvana. It's like, yeah, everybody says Nirvana. Yeah, great. Yeah, Smells Like Teen Spirit's a good song. They got some other good things. You know, yes, their lyrics like to mean things. But I was always team Pearl Jam over Nirvana.
Yeah, I was the outlier in the Soundgarden world, trying to scream like Cornell. But Nirvana, I mean, this album gets released my freshman year of college, right? So you have this, you have the Black Album, Use Your Illusion 1 and 2, and No More Tears all find their way. Snoop had a big release as well. So you pretty much had four or five things battling for the CD players. And far and away, this album was it. Never mind. It was to the point where if I could have had noise-canceling headphones at the time, which were, you know, studio quality, really, really expensive, you know, not, you know, $29 like you get them now, I would have worn them, because as good an album as it was like, can we listen to something else, please? And then it became 10, right? Which was, August of that year. So, like, those two albums were so much my freshman year of college. I looked for anything else and liked anything else. And it didn't, not to diminish what they put out. They were fantastic albums. They hold up. We listen to them all the time. They're part of, you know, pop culture forever. And like you said, changed the way we looked at music and a whole different thrust that came behind it. But it was in the moment. I'm like, I got to get away from it. Hey, it's like some of the pop songs now. It's like that, you know, every four song rotation that you'll have. I mean, I love a lot of the Olivia Rodrigo stuff.
Well, that's good for you.
It's, yeah, no, exactly. and it has been until it's not.
Yeah. Twitter it out about a fresca. Mike at Swollen Dome, the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon. Coming up next, two things I think in college football, and they could both be big deals this Saturday and beyond. That's next, Fox.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Fox Sports Radio, The Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon. You don't need to tell me that. I know this. I've known this for a while. Yeah. All right. Yes. Going into tomorrow, two big teams that have a lot at stake in college football. And they're kind of going in opposite directions. Clemson has a big game coming up against North Carolina State. North Carolina State's a solid team. Clemson is not for real. You know, as good, as talented as DJ Uiagalelei is, their offense has struggled. It just hasn't worked for them. And it's not just going to magically reappear. And, you know, we expect Clemson to be good every year. Dabo Sweeney is going to uncover Deshaun Watson. Then he's going to uncover Trevor Lawrence. They're just going to not miss a beat. Well, eventually, not every guy you take is going to be that great or going to fit with what you do. Clemson's really in trouble, man. They have not looked good, nor have they looked like, hey, we're suddenly going to get it and start scoring 50 points a week. This could be one of those three or four loss years for Clemson. I'm not buying them this season.
Well, you're really just looking ahead, because are you already calling for the upset on my birthday?
Oh, buddy, of course I am. I'm
when we're in studio watching Clemson and Syracuse getting it on. Yeah, I mean, I just look at the schedule, and as we've talked about, you know, in past weeks, and here's another great test for them. On the schedule, though, there aren't many spots where you just say, all right, I don't know about this one. So we'll see what NC State's able to bring as it's a road game. But even if it's not clean, it's the win and proceed, right? I don't see a bunch of these squads as the schedule, unless they jumble it up, Smith. You know, something like, you know, your kid's soccer schedule. Hey, you know what? We had to change this game out. They decided they couldn't make it from wherever, so you're now playing this. No, I don't think they're doing that to Clemson. So based on the schedule as it plays out right now, I don't see hiccups, which means it may not be pretty. They may not be scoring a ton of points. You mentioned the Clemson-Georgia Tech of 14-8. That was a real barn burner. That you know, winning ugly is a real thing, going all the way back to 1983 in the Chicago White Sox.
Look at you. See what I did there? White Sox in. Yeah. I see you getting them in, buddy. You know, the other team, really quick, is that I'm pretty sure Michigan is back. I mean, I know I've fallen for this, just like the Raiders, but
you're just trying to butter up your wife.
No, she's not even home yet. It doesn't matter.
You have some non-Detroit trip you want to take.
No. Well, we all have non-Detroit trips we want to take.
Well, of course.
For the first time, they have their identity, like the one that Harbaugh has wanted since he took over. We got sledgehammer running backs, and look, Blake Corum is a star. This guy's going to wind up being, in it for the Heisman Trophy as we get down to it. He's had a great start. They have a couple of guys that can run the ball. They have a good playmaker quarterback in Cade McNamara. Then they have J.J. McCarthy ready to step in as one of the big recruits in college football, kind of like Zach Wilson, the way he can throw the football. I know I fall into that trap, but this feels different. They have their identity. They know who they want to be. We're going to sledgehammer the ball. We're going to make plays. And it's kind of a down year in the Big Ten. All the good teams, we don't know if they're still really good.
I just always want folks to remember that Harbaugh wins 9 or 10 games every year. They just need to calm down and realize who they are. You know, like Simba.
Twitter at How About a Fresca. Mike at Swollen Dome, the Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon. Coming up next is the Dino Babers postgame show. Syracuse, yo. Okay, not really, but that'd be cool.